Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington City Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Today, we're talking with Janine Waar, who is the current executive director of the Marine Science Center based in Port Townsend. And she's going to be talking about some of the new developments at the Marine Science Center, some interface with coastal resilience and hazards issues. And I'd like to get started by saying welcome to you, Janine.
Thank you, Aaron. It's always a delight to talk with you. I think we have some great conversations, and this will bear that out, I'm hoping.
Likewise. So I'd like to start off with, the big news in Jefferson County, Port Townsend, is about the purchase of the flagship building and the removal of the pier out at Fort Worden, where you guys have been housed for quite a while. Could you speak about what the plans you have are for the flagship building to start off with?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, next year we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. So we are very grateful to State Parks for 4 decades of partnership with State Parks in our space on the pier and our museum space on the land. When State Parks did their master planning for the marine areas of Fort Worden, became clear that the pier was going to be coming down and that we needed to find a home on the land. And so that began in earnest really in 2017. And it's been a long process. And so one of the things that our overriding principles were that we wanted to be the facility, the new facility, to be a demonstration model of coastal resilience. That was one of the elements of our vetting process. And when you look at Flagship Landing, right there, essentially at the beginning of downtown Port Townsend, what better iconic test or poster child, if you will, poster building for coastal resilience could we get? And so when it came up, when Flagship Landing came up as a possibility, we dug into due diligence in a pretty serious way. We brought in some coastal experts, an architect that is all about historic, transforming historic buildings into for and giving them a new life, and a world-class structural engineer that really helped us look at the survivability of that building. And one of the things that we look through the lens of sea level rise and storm surge and are going to be over the next really probably 3 years looking at that pretty seriously in terms of what we eventually will do with the building. And it's complex because, as you know, Aaron, the future, at least my crystal ball is fuzzy. I don't know about yours.
Mine's fuzzy sometimes. In the early morning, it gets fuzzy. The data is pretty clear.
Yeah, the data is clear. And we are very excited to be working with our city manager, John Morrow, who recently spoke at our fall fundraiser talking about coastal resilience. And I think he has the right of it, which is you can't just look at it from one particular perspective, and it has to be a community-wide collaborative effort. And with the North Olympic Development Council, what the work that they have been doing, and Cindy Janes and her team at Local 2020 in terms of coastal resilience and adaptation to sea level rise, there's already some excellent groundwork that is laid. In addition, one of our board members who served as the regional director for USGS has a strong interest in coastal resilience as well. And USGS, the federal program, has created a very interesting modeling tool called COSMOS, which looks at what happens, what potentially happens in storm surge and with sea level rise. And it gets down to the, or has the potential to get down to the building level. And so we could look at, with some assurance on what would happen as conditions continue to rise.
So if one of our listeners wanted to delve into that deeper, they would go to the United States Coast and Geodetic Survey site, and could they put in a search for COSMOS, as it sounds like it's spelled? Would that
Yes. Okay. Yes. And we're going to be partnering more closely with them coming up. There's actually they have the model pretty well built out for California. And so coming attractions will probably have some kind of a program on that with the Marine Science Center in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. So you've been working with some architects and engineers, obviously, down at the flagship building. Are there any specific structural things that people would see in the future that would be addressing, you know, sea level rise and other coastal resilient hazards? Threats?
Well, right now, if you go in the basement of the building, the water comes through the riprap, and actually you can see little rivers of water after a king tide has come in. That is by design. The building is actually on pilings. Uh-huh. So it's not that dissimilar from the current home of the aquarium, but those pilings are super solid. Our structural engineer looked at it, and those go down to bedrock kind of substrate that is very stable. And so that was the first piece of good news, because you really want to know what your foundation is. In terms of sea level rise, we might need to raise the floor. So that's one of the things. But those particular elements are going to need to emerge over the next 3 years. And I did a separate interview with Larry and attention please that on my upcoming transition. So that will really be left to the next executive director to sort out how we really grapple with these kinds of things. But the bones are excellent and the foundation is really solid. It's going to need seismic retrofitting. There was some done in the 80s with the major renovation, but more will be needed. But as I said, we really hope, and our strong intention is to use this process as a demonstration model of what can be done and what kinds of things landowners need to think about. Mm-hmm. There's unless we moved upland, aquarium are usually right at the water's edge. There are a few exceptions to that. I used to live in Albuquerque, and I worked on the Albuquerque Aquarium back in the day, and there's no water's edge, or at least the Rio Grande, last I checked, is still not salt water. But most aquariums are associated with a coastal environment.
Mm-hmm. What kind of creatures did you have out of in the Albuquerque aquarium, just out of curiosity?
Oh, it was, it did tell the story of the Rio Grande all the way down to the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably the most iconic thing was a big skate pond. So that was, and Rays. That was interesting. But it started with the fishes in the upper Rio Grande.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, we find in our work here at SeaGrap in the cultural resilience world is that it means different things to different people, depending on who you talk to. You know, we know that obviously for an aquarium, sea level rise is a potential problem. But in a nutshell, what does cultural resilience look to you? What does it look like to your organization, if you can explain that?
That is a great question. So coastal resilience is a combination of physical structure, so morphology of the coast, but we are the biology sort of people mainly. And so coastal resilience for us also means habitat, and habitat is changing constantly. And that, I think one of the things that we're really grappling with on the planet these days is the rapid rate of change. Biology has evolved over a period of time on a biological time scale. But what we're grappling with today is that time scale of adaptation is tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions of years, where what we're talking about is change within a decade or less. And biology is just not, that's not the time scale that biological adaptation can react to without some catastrophic issues. And so when you look at salmon, for example, the sea level rise is going to change kind of where the coast is, where those sand lamps that they find yummy are. And it's not just climate change. The climate change includes heating up of the waters and reduction of snowpack and all of the kinds of things that impact habitat. And so it's about the physical structures and the human created environment, but it's also about that changing habitat that's really difficult to predict.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, the point you brought up about how evolution and adaptation in many cases cannot keep up with the rate of change that's happening in front of our very eyes. You know, some creatures can adapt pretty quick, but there's going to be some that obviously won't be able to.
But that's a great example, Aaron. When you some species are going to do better. And so jellies are doing pretty darn great. Cockroaches, they're doing fine. And urchins are doing great. So, but when you look at species that have a much more specific or narrow habitat or resource requirement, like orcas that only feed on Chinook salmon, that's going to be more challenging, because if you move the dial with that narrow bandwidth of resources or habitat, then it has a big effect on their sustainability.
Right. If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe. We're speaking with Janine Boir, the current executive director of the Marine Science Center in Port Townsend, and we are talking about coastal resiliency, adaptation, and all things related. So where were we, Janine?
One of the things we were talking about early on, Aaron, was collaboratives. Mm-hmm. And I am super excited about working with you and some of the other Sea Grant folks, potentially Northwest Straits, in forming a hub for coastal resilience. And I know we're talking about that later this week. So mm-hmm. that is pretty exciting. And I think it is that kind of multivariate solution, looking at the different perspectives, like what you had said, Aaron, it looks different. Coastal resilience looks different for different entities, different people. If you are a landowner, a coastal landowner, it looks a little different than if you are a fisher that has heavily invested in your vessel. And it's only through seeing and listening to all those different perspectives can we come up with adaptation plans that really work for this beautiful little Victorian seaport community.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too. The University of Washington is our, you know, our host organization. So we have all the resources of that institution as well as as well as NOAA. So it's something we're excited about being involved with as well.
Yes. Go Huskies. I'm yeah. Class of 85. Woohoo!
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. Well, back in the day.
Husky too. I was also curious. This is kind of a digression, but I think our listeners might be interested to know why the pier is being torn down.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot, you know, I'm sure it's a lot of it's common sense reasons, but I think, you know, it'd be interesting if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Absolutely. So the pier is approaching 80 years old. It was built in the World War II era, this current pier. And it was overbuilt by probably a factor of 10. And so there's a lot of pilings, and all of them are creosote soaked. And that has been leaching into the environment for all of those decades. That in combination with the fact that it is deteriorating, it is currently safe. There have been two structural engineering studies to look at the if it's safe to be habitable. There was one just redone in 2020 that confirmed that it is habitable, but to borrow the language from one of the studies, was it has lived its useful life and needs to either be replaced or come down. Mm-hmm. And that was the point at which that study emerged in 2016. And it was actually, we had been in strategic planning meetings. The Marine Science Center had been in strategic planning meetings. And it was actually one of our AmeriCorps at the time. It was all hands on deck. Everybody was in the room from AmeriCorps staff, all the board. And this brilliant young woman had the nerve to say, why, when we were talking about buildings and expansion, why would we build on the pier? The pier is not good for the marine environment. The pier really should come down. And it was a moment of, I think there was a moment of silence. There was probably 30 seconds of just silence when she said that. But it was a pivotal moment for the organization. And when we're looking at leadership from every part of your organization, that was a moment for us that was really powerful. So we have had to grieve that loss of making the decision to not advocate that the pier be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of different reasons. Number one, it's not good for the marine environment. Even if it were to be done as sustainably as possible, the reality is it would be realistically probably $30 to $40 million to rebuild that pier as it stands today. And I don't think that's a good investment, even if it weren't good for the marine environment. There are so many other demands in our community. And that would just be the pier. That wouldn't include what it would take to build an aquarium out there. So it was a hard decision, but we decided to not advocate for rebuilding the pier. And that's what the point at which we said, okay, we're going to be looking for a home on the land for the aquarium and unifying the two exhibit spaces we have, the exhibit that's in the museum, which is Hope, the orca, and then the aquarium aspects of the organization on the pier. And what I'm really excited about Flagship Landing is it's going to allow us to unify the visitor experience and tell one cohesive story as opposed to being separated into two buildings. And so that is a wonderful opportunity. And the fact that we're going to be reaching an audience that we today really realistically don't reach. We're going to be expanding upon into talking with people who don't already have some glimmer of the kind of challenges that the marine waters are experiencing today.
Right. You know, most of the aquariums I've been to, which is a lot, are not on piers. So to be on a pier is purely a luxury.
Yeah.
Itself. Once you're experiencing an aquarium or up close, it doesn't really matter whether you're on a pier or not.
Yeah. And we're very grateful to have had that iconic spot, but we knew that we needed another iconic home. When we lose that, it probably will not happen. It definitely won't happen before 2024. So it gives us some time. So we'll be operating in some form or another on the pier, in the museum and at Flagship for a number of years. And that has its own operational challenges, but we are a small but mighty organization, and I think we're up to it.
What will the visitor see at the Flagship Museum? What's the end goal for that? For what they're going to experience as far as aquariums, exhibits? Give us a brief snapshot of what that might look like.
Phase one, we're going to be having exhibits and a gift shop in the center space. And we'll probably be using part of the building to do some preparation of bones for an outreach program. So it'll capture really the core competencies of the visitor experience, education programs, and our community science, but kind of all in one in this first phase. And phase two, that will be for the community to figure out over the next few years.
Mm-hmm. So I take it the community is involved with this process on a big scale.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be wrapping up here in a few minutes. Is there something you'd really like to add or point out or say, you know, in the next several minutes, Janine?
Well, I am just extraordinarily gratified in the outpouring of support from the community, from all different sectors for the purchase of Flagship Landing and the excitement that we have heard from far and wide about that decision is very gratifying. And I'm excited to see how we proceed.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a weak ending, so don't end there.
No, well, we're not done yet. I have another question for you. What's the flagship building going to look like on the outside? Is it going to pretty much have the same sort of brick stained wood look, or is that going to be changed at all?
Well, it's a historic building. So it is going to, the exterior is going to remain the same. The side facing Water Street is going to definitely remain the same. It was actually a building built in the 1880s, and it was originally the Golden Saloon.
Really? I thought it was a new building for some reason. Newish.
It was had major renovations in the 80s, but it is historic. And so by that very nature, we are glad to honor that and are required to honor that. So the exterior of the building is going to remain pretty consistent. They're probably going to be more windows looking out on the view, which is pretty exciting. I personally, what I'm most excited about the potential of is a roof deck. And that'll be pretty exciting. So I'm looking forward to the day of clinking glasses with you, Aaron, on the roof deck.
It sounds like you got a phone call coming in there. Well, thank you very much, Janine, for joining us today. And we're going to be excited to be working with you some more at the fort. And I'd like to end this by saying this is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Kuik for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a great day. Ha,